Welcome to Career Conversations. My name is Siobhan Murphy, a careers consultant here in DCU Careers Service. Our guests today are from Arista, and it's David Sutton, who is Director of Software Engineering and the Dublin Site Lead. And we also have Peter Edwards, who is a Software Engineering Manager. And they're joining us today as part of the Virtual Recruitment Special Podcast Series that we're running again this year. So thank you both for participating in the podcast. So I'm going to start off with yourself, David. Can you tell us a little bit about Arista? What is it about? What do you do? And I suppose kind of tell us all things, you know, what's the current situation with Arista?
Okay, thanks very much. So Arista Networks is an industry leader in cloud networking solutions. So our market would be sort of the large data centers and campus environments. And the products that we sell would be open programmable switches designed for, you know, business-wide SDN networks. The platforms that we sell would range, you know, in speeds from 10 to 400 gigabits per second, and provide lots of extra bells and whistles around that, including sort of network-wide management, which we do through CloudVision, and it's all built around Arista EOS, which is our extensible operating system. The company was founded in California in 2004, with our first product release being in 2008. And the company has been profitable since 2010. It currently has about 3,000 employees. And we continue to see great growth. In the last quarter, we had 30% year-on-year growth. And we have about 7,000 customers. The software team is spread across the globe. So we have development teams in Austin, Texas, in Bangalore in India, here in Dublin, Krakow in Poland, Nashua in the States, Pune in India, San Francisco, again the States, Silicon Valley, which is where our HQ is, Sydney, Australia, and Vancouver in Canada. And the company was founded, as I said, back in 2004, and it was founded and led, and still is led, by world-class engineers. So for example, Andy Bechtolsheim would have been the original founder of the company, and Andy is very well known in the industry. He would have been the founder of Sun Microsystems back in 1982. He designed the first Sun workstation, and he subsequently went on to lead and found a series of companies. And Arista was one that he started along with Ken Duda, who is our CTO, and currently leads the software team and has done right from the start. And our CEO is Jayshree Ullal, and she is also from an engineering and networking background. So it's all very much led from the top by very much world-class engineers.
And can you tell us a little bit about, so you've kind of given us a bit of an insight into the startup of the company and how it is, you know, very well established now. Can you tell us a little bit about the culture of the company? Because I think you've kind of indicated there around the quality of the, the software engineering side, you know, the technical, the engineering, resources you have.
Right. So absolutely. So it's interesting because Ken himself will spend a lot of time talking about this, and everyone that comes into the company is a new hire. He takes the time to speak to them specifically about culture because his experience was over the years, you know, that he was just very, very much driven by the engineering side. He wanted, you know, he's never happier than when he was sitting in front of a screen and had his editor open and was writing code, and sort of tended to think about things like culture and stuff as being just sort of things that happen somewhere else in the company. But over the years, he learned, as in fact I have too, that culture is absolutely so critical to your experience at a company. You know, it's so much tied up in what your values are, you know, what you really care about. You know, it informs whether you're proud or happy or satisfied to come to your work, and whether the coworkers that you're working with are, how do they treat each other, and, you know, what are the norms and rules of things. So actually in the first couple of years, Ken spent a lot of time codifying a culture for the company. Even when there were just 10 people in the company, they were, and his colleagues were saying, "Ken, why are you spending so much time on this? You know, we've only done about He said, well, no, at some point there's going to be hundreds of us, and if I don't get this right from the start, it's not going to be possible to fix it afterwards, you know, because it's so much, culture is so much set by the founders and from the top down, you know. So the in brief, the Arista culture would basically be, the first thing is to do the right thing. And by that, we mean both in the ethical sense and the engineering sense. So in the ethical sense, it would be treating people with honesty and candor, talking about the real reasons why we do things, treating people with respect, and basically just treating people the way you would like to be treated. And, you know, that will get us to the right place. And that very much pervades the company even today, you know, where again and again, people will comment after joining the company how helpful everyone is and how friendly everyone is. And on the engineering, in the engineering sense, you know, to me, this was very much a breath of fresh air when I first came across this, was that, you know, like Ken will ask the question, if you don't have time to do it right, what makes you think you've got time to do it over? You know, and that in his experience over the years and mine too, you know, that engineering gets itself into a bit of a mess, you know, if it's basically driven by a schedule and driven to an end date, because that just starts incentivizing people to take shortcuts. So, you know, at Arista, we use the schedule as a planning tool, but it's absolutely not the word of God, and you'll never be incentivized to hit a date. It will always be around making sure that the quality of the product is right. Quality is our most important attribute of everything we do. And then the next principle would be just collaboration is better than central control. So, you know, the hierarchical view of corporate power is fundamentally misguided. We believe that each team gets to agree on the right approach to their project. The approach is not dictated from outside or from above. So what that means is that, you know, we try to make the organization absolutely as flat as possible. And we try to give individual engineers, even those who just start straight out of college, as much autonomy as we possibly can. And one of the side effects of that, and Peter will probably attest to this, is that as a manager in the organization, you know, you end up with a lot of direct reports. So, for example, I think I have about 22 right now, you know, which means it's basically impossible to micromanage. And that's by intent, because we don't want people to be micromanaging others. We want everyone to be given the autonomy and authority to do what they know is best for them.
Yeah, and I think as well, because people have that element of autonomy as well, to some level, the position of managing engineers is probably not the sense that people see it in other organizations. I mean, people will end up drifting into different areas from what they're initially kind of assigned to do. So, for example, if you're looking at a particular domain in the company and you see that you can have an impact somewhere else, you can go off and, you know, contribute time doing that. And your line manager may not, I'm not saying won't be aware of what you're doing, but he certainly won't be able to have anywhere near the impact on what you're doing as somebody else might do. So the lines are very, very blurred in terms of reporting in that sense. I mean, there's obviously requirements for things like, you know, HR reporting and stuff like that, that, you know, your manager discuss things like salary and how you're doing in the company, but, you know, you may not be talking with your manager on a regular basis about the actual, you know, line work, the work that you're doing in terms of products.
So that just maybe I might have a chat with yourself, Peter, at this point. Now, there will be time to go into the specific kind of graduate roles, but if we talk about the early career of an engineer coming into Arista, can you maybe speak a little bit? Now, you've talked about the culture of autonomy, but I suppose what I'm trying to, I suppose, unpack is, you know, to have a little bit of understanding about the development side there.
Sure. So, I mean, there's a number of different kind of teams that the group in Dublin are kind of broken down into. So if you imagine, we sell these physical devices really to customers. So there's kind of platform specific parts of that, and there's platform independent parts. And that's like two breakdowns of the teams. And then there's teams that work on things like telemetry. And there's a team that work on languages and stuff like that within Arista. So, you know, we kind of offer individual graduates kind of a choice, or not so much choice, but just a preference in terms of what part of the company seems the most interesting for them to work in. And based on what the actual requirements we are in terms of what number of people we need working in a particular area, most people will end up working in one of the areas that they kind of express some interest in working in. And at that point, what will happen is you'll kind of be assigned a manager. You'll be assigned a mentor, and the mentor will effectively help you kind of guide you through your first few weeks and months as an engineer in Arista. Will help you kind of give you a few initial projects to kind of work on, where you can, you know, learn how the tooling systems work, learn how the products work, and, you know, just learn how to contribute as an individual contributor into the company does. And that process takes, you know, a number of months like it would in any other company. And at that point, you just like all of the other engineers, there's a set of work that we need to do on a quarterly basis or a yearly basis. And there's a list of things customers want, and we will assign engineers to work on individual projects. Some of the projects will be directly customer focusing. Some will be internally focusing, and based on your own interests and what you show an ability to work on, that will kind of dictate the projects that you end up working on. So it's very much based on, you know, what have you shown that you're good at? What have you shown that you can do? And what have you shown that you can actually have an impact on? And, you know, that may lead you to kind of continue working in the area that you originally assigned, whether it be, you know, working on routing protocols, or, you know, if you end up working on routing protocols and it turns out you don't like how the Linux kernel does a certain thing, you might end up working on that instead. So there is this kind of initial ramp up where we kind of get people to the point that they understand what's going on. And beyond that, there's a somewhat chaotic system of, you know, applying people and giving people, or applying people into different roles as they kind of go forward. So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it's brilliant. And I come back to you about the skills and the talents. But just to kind of, suppose, frame out that question first, I might come back to yourself, David. Maybe give us a bit of an insight. What are the discipline areas that you're seeking for in graduates at the moment?
So generally speaking, in the team in Dublin, you know, we are actively growing all of the time, and we're doing that across all of the teams and across many of the functions. You know, so for example, you know, in my team right now, I have openings for about 20 software engineers. I have openings for UX designers, and I have openings for SREs. But we also have other functions such as test engineers, proof of concept POC engineers. There's room for technical assistance center roles. And IT world. So, you know, it's very broad. And as Peter was saying, you know, the actual area that you end up working on when you join us, you know, we like that to be driven primarily by your own interests and your own preferences. So in terms of the actual, like, skills that you might need, I mean, we don't really, you know, the domain of networking is obviously our space, but we don't look to people to have had particular experience or training in that area. So we anticipate that, you know, we will have to provide that internally on the job. And so what that means is, what we're really looking for is people who can demonstrate that they are able to program, that they like coding, that they're, you know, that they would like it, and that they have a gift for doing so. And that they're the sort of person that we feel we could work with. And really beyond that, then, you know, we don't even have particular specific requirements around languages or anything. You know, we kind of feel that, you know, if you can demonstrate that you are able to do great stuff in any particular language, then it's only a matter of, you know, a lot of that just transfers straight across into other languages, you know.
Okay, what would be the dominant language at the moment for you?
I mean, for us, the dominant languages would be C, C++. Those sort of would be the core EOS languages that we use. We do also have a lot of work going on in Go, which is a fairly, you know, just over 10 years old now. And we also do quite a bit of work on Python. Mm. So, you know, one of the sort of cultural principles we have is that we don't have a separate QA team. So the development team themselves are fully responsible for not just, you know, the design and the specification and talking to the customer about what features need to be done, and then obviously coding them and getting them reviews. But they're also responsible for the full testing of those products as well. And that testing tends to mostly be written in Python. So, you know, there would be a lot of work in Python as well. And then we do have front-end team as well, and they're mostly working in React.js.
Yeah, we find our students nowadays do pick up other languages as themselves on the side. They seem to like experimenting with different languages than the core Java and C++. So that's interesting. And it's always, you know, I suppose one time there was nearly only the one language going around, but I suppose definitely it's getting a much more wider now. And we do find our students are definitely paying more attention to that and experimenting themselves in the different languages. You talked briefly, or you alluded to FIT. I know, and FIT often comes back down to, I suppose, checking in, you know, about the right fit for the culture of your organisation. If you were thinking about, say, a graduate coming in now at the moment that, you know, may or may not have a huge amount of experience of culture in an organization, and I suppose explaining how they might be a good fit for an organization, because that hasn't been, you know, that hasn't been their experience. You know, they have been in college all of the time and school before that. How might you recommend they kind of, I suppose, translate their fit to your culture?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think how best to answer that. I mean, I think the one thing, you know, the as part of applying for a role is that, you know, you will be interviewing with some of the team. And I think the team that you meet are actually pretty representative of who we are as a group of people, you know, so I think that will be pretty informative to you if you're on the interviewing, you know, through the person being interviewed. And you know, I think one of the most important things, obviously, about a job is the people that you work with is, you know, that they're the ones you're going to be spending so many hours a day working with stuff. So, you know, and that's part of what we would basically look for. Is this somebody that, you know, is talkative?
So maybe if I can kind of compare how working in Arista is like to kind of some of the other organizations I've been in. One of the things that I kind of noticed from the initial interview that I did with the company was that it's quite jarring, the fact that a lot of the more senior people are very, very technical. And jarring in a good way. I mean, like, I've worked in technical roles a lot, and you find that as you go up the management hierarchy, you find that people become, I won't say, you know, completely less technical, but they're certainly not quite as detail oriented. So within Arista, I think a lot of the engineers, certainly in the EOS side of things, I mean, I can only speak for my own area of influence, but within the EOS side of things, I mean, like, all the way from, you know, the new graduate engineers all the way up through all of the management chain up to the CTO himself. I mean, you know, everybody to some extent is contributing code. Nobody is going to be confused or, you know, unclear about what you're doing if you start talking about things that are quite technical and, like, down to kind of the level of, you know, poking at registers on a device, you know. So it's, at least for the EOS side of things, it can be a very detail-oriented position, and you know, you want to be able to kind of, you know, roll up your sleeves and get involved in stuff that is, as I say, very, very detailed and potentially complicated. And it's certainly very challenging at times, but it's very, very rewarding in order to, you know, when you actually see something like that pan out, you actually see that the work that you're doing is, you know, taking this massively complicated thing and making it doing something new that it hasn't done before.
And just on your selection process there, I suppose I'm curious, that, you know, do you do like a technical whiteboard interview, or do you do like technical exercises or anything to either to assess, or, you know, what's your approach there?
So for me anyway, when I'm doing kind of interviews with candidates who've probably already gone through some sort of screening process where they're doing programming kind of challenges, is that we tend to kind of do something like, say, set a problem, and it's not kind of a problem that you're going to solve in 5 minutes. And it's not necessarily a problem that you're going to see a complete answer for. But what we do is we kind of sit down and almost as a pair programming exercise, just work out a solution to something. And it's what you're getting out of that. For me, what I'm getting out of that is I'm seeing how the person's able to actually, you know, design a solution to a problem that you've set them, how they're able to communicate what they're doing. And you kind of, as I say, you do it as a pair programming exercise. So you're pointing out what they might be able to do. You're helping them along. Obviously, you're asking the question that you've asked before, so you can seem very smug about knowing all the answers, but you do go through this kind of, you know, interactive process with them where they kind of come to a solution and come to a final answer to the question at some point, and then we go on through that. So although it's driven by the technical questions that you're asking, you kind of do get an awful lot of kind of interaction with the individual, and you can kind of see, you know, how well you're going to be able to work with somebody with that person later on if they end up working for the company.
So you're trying to really understand their approach, their thought process, right, how they're going about their problem solving approaches, and how they can communicate that to you, kind of, I suppose, newly talking out loud how they're approaching it, you know, and identifying the issues they're seeing
as they're
going along.
It's never going to be an ideal environment to kind of show off your abilities. I mean, no. it's obviously constrained by the time that you have to do it, and by, you know, the imbalance between the fact that you're interviewing a person for a job. But, you know, it's unfortunately the best way we have of actually, you know, seeing how, you know, technically able and how, you know, how somebody's able to think through these kind of problems. So yeah, it's not the ideal way, I suppose. It's not the perfect way of actually, you know, judging how someone's going to work out in the company, but it's the best that we've found, and it tends to work pretty well for us.
I just want to come back to the bigger picture there, David, because you mentioned in the outset there about like your clients would be kind of more, you know, data centers and so on. Can you just maybe, I suppose, think about, say, somebody coming in as an early career graduate into Arista, and maybe can you give us a little bit of an insight about where the company views itself going, like what's its strategy, what's its vision, where does it see its growth direction?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So the company, generally our business, we sort of look at it in five verticals. So there's the Cloud Titans, which is kind of our traditional business where we sort of do the bulk of our business, which is like, you know, the Googles and Azures and Facebooks, those kind of customers. And then there's the enterprise, which is, you know, a lot of big, large, global Fortune 500 businesses and stuff. There'll be a lot of healthcare in there, retail and all that kind of thing. And then we have specialty cloud. That's kind of a term we use ourselves, but it would be sort of for companies like Netflix and Spotify and the Oracle cloud offering as well. And the final two are financials, so the high-frequency trading space, and then also service providers like Telia and Vocus and companies like that. You know, so those are the five different sort of areas that we're building on. And particularly in the enterprise, that's a relatively new area for us in the campus, which we've been breaking into. We've actually only been selling products there for about a year and a half. We set ourselves in the first 12 months a target of doing $100 million in business, and we achieved that. And our hope is to probably double that or more this coming year. That's an area that's, we have very small percentage of the total addressable market, and it obviously seems like a very big potential growth for the company. Obviously, you know, as the cloud continues to grow, and as we're very much part of that in so many of the big cloud titans, you know, our fortunes are very much tied to that as well.
Brilliant.
And beyond that, we're constantly looking for new areas. In many respects, we have way more opportunities than we have the ability to fulfill them. Mm. And that's what drives the fact that, you know, we're looking for people to come on board and help us just to push the envelope further for the company.
Yeah, because I suppose the potential of any kind of a cloud company like yourselves or anything like that is that, you know, it's kind of very much at the beginning, you know, even though it seems to be well established at the moment. But, it's definitely not an old trade at this point in time. Can I just ask you a little bit, because I know our students often might be screaming at the radio or at the podcast at me now for not asking particular questions. But one of them I know they always like to know is, obviously, over the last 18 months and beyond, and the IT industry is well known for remote working and things like that. But what about is the potentiality of working in one of your other countries, you know, because you did mention earlier that, you know, that you have San Francisco, you have somewhere in India, I know, I remember you saying, and things like that, and Krakow, and obviously the holy grail of IT would be in Silicon Valley. So what are the opportunities for secondments or transfers or even going over for a period of time? Does that happen that much?
So, I mean, obviously, in the last 18 months, the answer is no.
No, exactly, yeah.
But so generally, it doesn't tend to happen that much. So, you know, if you're graduating in Ireland, then we would expect you to apply in Dublin and join the Dublin team. I mean, we do, from time to time, people will travel to other offices, you know, and they may choose to work there for a while. I think in the current in the new world of where, you know, the whole conversation around remote working and everything, that's even more likely, I think, going forward, you know, where you would be based in Dublin, an employee in Dublin, but you might choose to go and work, in whatever other office that it was that took your fancy. I mean, as far as HQ, Silicon Valley being the holy grail for the IT industry, I'm not sure that's true anymore.
Maybe Dublin is now. Maybe I put my foot in it, did I?
So, Does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, it's good, because it's just one of those things that I suppose I'm very conscious at the stage of life that graduates are. There's always, you always like to think you could possibly work somewhere else, you know what I mean, and keep your career on track, you know what I mean, as well. And, work for, Multinet, but maybe work out of a different office or something like that, the opportunities to transfer.
Some people doing exactly that, they might choose to work overseas in one of our offices for several months or something like that.
It's just the dynamic that we might be getting out and about a bit more, and at the same time, I suppose maybe the more opportunity we have to travel, maybe we won't want to travel, but it's just, I suppose, get that travel word back on the agenda in some shape or form and explore it.
The moving around and the different offices that people are working in, I think one thing that's probably important to point out is that I know for a lot of companies, what they will do is they will, the office that you're in is going to dictate the work that you're doing, so that, you will have certain products being worked on from one particular office and another product will be worked on from a different office. The Arista team does tend to be kind of, horizontally distributed across the globe. So you kind of, the team that you're working on, for example, the team I'm in that's working on, routing features and similar, is certainly distributed between, all of the time zones that we work in. So your daily working kind of environment is going to possibly involve speaking a whole lot more people in HQ than it is on the third floor of the building that you're sitting in. So
The irony of it is that if you're working in HQ, maybe your colleagues would actually not be in HQ at all. They would actually maybe be in Dublin or Bangalore or something like that.
Oh, absolutely. So, we're dealing with people from Vancouver, from HQ, from Nashua, from Bangalore on a daily basis.
It's such a different world, isn't it, nowadays? And I suppose that's the highs of it as well. It's a global talent pool, and that's the benefits of it. So just coming back to yourself, Peter, I'm going to ask you maybe for your top tips. Consider your final year software engineering student or your master's in computing student, and they're really embarking on that first graduate professional role. They may have had a placement experience, but we don't know how that all worked out for everybody with COVID in the last 18 months. So, what would be your top tips? You've kind of really shared about the type of work, the culture and things like that. But if you think about somebody putting yourself into that 20-something shoes and saying, right, I want to apply for Arista, what would I really want them to put forward in an application?
That's a hard question to answer. I suppose really what you need to do is you need to think about is it something that you have an interest in? I mean, I think an awful lot of times people will kind of, apply to jobs where it's kind of, it's somebody wants to go to a particular company because all of their friends are going to whatever. But I think it's something you really need to think about. Is this the kind of industry that I want to spend some time in? Because, when you start your first job out of college, you may spend a year, you may spend 2 years, you might spend 5 or 8 years in the place. So it's, you need to kind of look at the individual place you're applying and say, are you interested in spending a fair amount of time in this place? Because it's going to be your first experience out of college where you kind of learn about kind of company cultures and everything else. If you want to apply to Arista, I think, our interviews, and as I say, the organization itself is a very technical organization. So I know at times people will go through phases where they're doing more and less technical things. I mean, if you've been studying for exams or whatever recently, you may not have spent a huge amount of time sitting at a keyboard. And again, because our interview process is going to involve you actually sitting and writing code, it's something that you would have wanted to have done recently. So, I'd expect that people would maybe spend a little bit of time, whether it's looking at the likes of, HackerRank or one of these kind of sites that allows you to do kind of programming puzzles, just go and practice that. And it's not so much that we expect that you're going to learn anything new by doing it, but just by actually exercising that part of your brain before you sit down at the interview, it means that that lingua franca that we have of data structures and algorithms, you can kind of discuss and talk about it in such a way that you can kind of portray to us the technical abilities that you have. And I suppose, again, the main thing is to be yourself and just to be able to have a conversation with the person that's sitting on the other side of the table with you. Again, I know it's difficult because of the power imbalance in the situation, but, actually getting to chat and to, draw out the person on the other side of the table is important.
Brilliant. And yourself, David?
Well, I think Peter probably covered most of it, I think. I would just say, that at Arista, we very much see software engineering as a first-class profession, and I know just recently somebody joined the team who had been working as a software engineer in other companies, and like after about a month plus, I got this really excited chat from him saying, "This is just so amazing. I just love being here because, you know, this is like being back in the computer science class. I'm doing all this pure computer science stuff that I got, you know, that I learned about at university, and now I'm actually getting to do it as part of my career." You know, so if that's the sort of thing that excites you, then I think you'll do really well at Arista. And if you're curious, driven, you know, and you like a straightforward working environment, then, you know, you definitely might want to consider starting your career with us. We'll basically be very happy to, we have a rule, which is that basically no part of the organization is off bounds or out of limits, you know, so really, you know, we have the product portfolio is such that we go right from the silicon all the way up to layer 7, you know, and so there's everything that basically you could possibly want to do in computer science, we're probably doing it somewhere, and the door is open for you to be part of that. So, you know, in terms of the interview, as Peter said, just, you know, go onto Codility or HackerRank or other ones like this and just do a bit of coding practice. And really, that's what it will probably stand to you best for the interview process.
Brilliant. Listen, I think I've learned a huge amount. And hopefully everyone that's listening will either engender a bit of curiosity, that they'll maybe go off and have a look at your website, visit you at the virtual recruitment fair, maybe book a video conversation or come online in the event and have a chat with yourselves. So hopefully that's going to help our listeners with our research when they're getting ready to meet you at the fair. So thank you so much for your insights. Websites tells us a lot, but I think there's nothing like speaking to people who actually work inside the organisation, and I suppose especially explaining the culture and how you go about your business. It's lovely to hear that from people who are working inside the organisation. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much.